Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, the greatest football partnership since Shearer and Owen.
Amongst the majority of the players for the majority of that game.
I was just looking, the Guardian crystallised Man United's form since that PSG win, you know, the famous win back obviously in the Champions League. Since then, it's been 5 wins, 4 draws and 10 defeats in all competitions. And if you just want to go Premier League for a second, they've won 4, drawn 4, lost 7, which is 16 points in 15 games. 15 games is a decent sample size. And they were saying if you were to extend that form across a 38-game season, it would be 40 points, not far off relegation form. Since that PSG game, it's not just a this season thing, since that PSG, I mean, it's hard to know how much blame Solskjaer should take and how much of it is to do with issues at the club since Ferguson left, frankly, but the impact he made initially seems to have all but evaporated.
Yeah, well, that's true. Yeah, that's absolutely true. In regards to particularly how they finished their last season was a little bit of a worry, and obviously some talk there in terms of whether they jumped too quickly and give him the job. But that's by and by now. He's managing, looks as if he will be for the foreseeable future. But if you're talking about the squad and the kind of the qualities of the squad at the moment in terms of where the weaknesses are, I think simply put, they're just short in certain key areas of the pitch, Joe. Still, they've made a couple of acquisitions in the summer. Wan-Bissaka in particular is impressed me. I think he's going to be an excellent player. He's going to develop into probably one of the best around. Harry Maguire, I've always had one or two small questions marks about. I know he's had a huge amount of plaudits since the start of the season. Generally speaking, his play has been very good, but in moments for Manchester United this season, you've seen the small frailties in his game in terms of his kind of mobility. He's a big lad, 6'3", 6'4". Carries a little bit of weight. I'm not saying he's overweight, just carries a little bit of weight. That affects him a little bit, Joe, in terms of kind of change of direction, a little bit of pace over 5 to 10 yards. You saw in the goal they conceded against Crystal Palace was a couple of weeks ago, Old Trafford, a little flick over the top. He couldn't recover back quickly enough. Getting contact with AU. And you saw again at the weekend, Yarmolenko came in off the side. Didn't do an awful lot, Joe. Just checked it back onto his left foot. And he was the closest defender. Maguire, it was his responsibility to go in and confront him. And he couldn't. He got done a little bit. Couldn't shift his feet. Couldn't shift his body weight across. So, not saying Harry Maguire is a weakness. I think, generally speaking, he has strength in that back four. But there's other areas of the pitch. Kind of midfield in particular, Joe, which is crying out for reinforcement, and that's a key area of the pitch. And as a time a year ago, I probably would have said Manchester United were short one top-class midfielder, thinking you could hang your hat on Matic and Paul Pogba in that area of the pitch. But Matic, over the last 12 months, has shown signs of just a drop-off, just in terms of age, comes to us all. So you're looking at a situation now, that Manchester United midfielder, I think, is probably two top-class centre of the fielders have to come in, and then you're hanging your hat on Paul Pogba coming in and showing the type of attitude in terms that we haven't seen for all of his Manchester United career. So for me, that's the fundamental. You can talk about Solskjaer, has he the presence and different other things going around the football club, but fundamentally they're short in key areas of the pitch.
Yeah, really it's a bigger story than Solskjaer. And they talked about it even during the coverage yesterday, watching in Sky. 892 million sterling spent since 2013. And Gary Neville sort of scratching his head saying, how is it that when Rashford comes off, that they're left basically with nobody, that Jesse Lingard finds himself up as a false nine? And look, I know injuries can make any squad look depleted very quickly. But Martial, Greenwood, Rashford is almost what they're left with. And you just wonder, like, the things you're talking about there, two top-class midfielders, maybe another front player as well, you could be talking another 200-300 million and a few transfer windows to get them.
I didn't think the argument was that strong. I've got to be honest with you, Gary Neville's in terms of how short. I don't think you'd make that argument when you've got a significant number of players injured. And I think, read between the lines, Solskjaer was more than happy to go into this season with Marcus Rashford and Martial as his first choice number nine. A lot of people are saying Lukaku went, they didn't replace him. But for me, they didn't replace him because Solskjaer was happy to go into the season knowing either Marcus Rashford would be his first number nine and Martial in support or vice versa. So he felt he had two top class number nines, with the likes of Mason Greenwood potentially to come in as a win and play some games. So for me, there's logic behind that, so I have no problem with that. Mm. The argument then, you can then open the argument, Joe, in terms of, well, are either of them good enough? Has the likes of Rashford and Martial got left? So I would have given him another little option up front, you know, one or two injuries, or if you have to kind of, you know, just chop and change a little bit, another body high up the pitch. An orthodox number nine probably would have given them a little bit more leeway higher up the pitch. But, yeah, you're right in terms of the money spent. I was listening to that coverage as well, like yourself, and I was wondering if Jose was squirming a little bit in the seat when everybody was talking about the money that had been squandered, because he was there for whatever 2.5 years he was, Jose, and he spent a fair bit of money himself. Mm. But I think what you could say about Jose was, Mourinho, the players that he had, the players he brought in, generally speaking, the team was well set up from a defensive point of view. The defensive setup was pretty good. They counter-attacked very well. Not the easiest on the eyes, some people would suggest, but certainly not kind of open, and or didn't get very kind of fragmented or loose in their defensive shape, as we have seen on occasion for Manchester United this season.
Yeah. The other thing as well is there, I mean, this is a less important point, and I'd say you as a former professional don't think it's important at all, but they're not a very good watch either. Like, increasingly, over the last couple of years, they're just quite a boring team to watch. You don't really look forward to their games.
I don't know. One man's wine is another man's poison, I suppose, Joe. I suppose if you're talking about this kind of, you know, the Manchester United way, we expect the same type of football. I don't quite buy into that myself. You know, we're all entertained by different type of brands of football. I'm not someone who particularly likes demand the team that plays the possession-based football, kind of dominates possession, makes a huge amount passes, complete passes, etc. I can get as much enjoyment watching a team that has less possession, maybe defends a little bit deeper, rock solid defensively, and consciously looks to play more of a counter-attacking game, but is actually very effective at it. And that's kind of, if we go back to that second half against Chelsea at Old Trafford, early in the season, I mean, I thought that was a great second half performance for Manchester United from a counter-attacking point of view.
Yeah,
and I was really engaged in that, Joe. Now, was I entertained by that? A kind of Manchester United team playing counter-attack football at home? Yeah, absolutely. I actually was.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. That feels increasingly like the exception, though, doesn't it? Like, when else have you seen it this year? What are you seeing?
No, you're right, but then you have to be set up that way. You've got to be set up to defend deep. You've got to be able to soak up pressure. You've got to be comfortable to do it. You've got to have the players to do that. And like I'm saying, I'm not exactly sure Manchester United have the players that kind of defensive setup to do that at the moment. So I don't think necessarily that's how Solskjaer's look at the play, but certainly with no Pogba in the team, when you look at McTominay, Matic and Pereira in central midfield, is anybody really expecting that Manchester United centre midfield to dominate in terms of possession? McTominay's a decent enough player, kind of box-to-box, wholehearted. Matic, like I said, is not going to open you up in terms of his range of passing. Pereira is not exactly sure what he is, a reasonable enough player. So really, without Paul Pogba, certainly Pogba's presence, that central midfield area, and I'm talking Pogba when he's tuned in, mentally, and he's ready to go. Manchester, you're not going to see, for me, Manchester United during this season actually dominate the ball and dominate teams just because of that lack of quality, like I've already said, in that central midfield area. They look far more effective for me, maybe sitting a little bit deeper times, as they did in that Chelsea game, and then go and look to pick people off with that kind of obvious pace that they have on the counter-attack. Whether that's going to be success for the medium to long term, I'm not too sure. But at the moment, I mean, you're right, Joe, they're not doing one or the other. We're referencing back to that Chelsea game, start of the season, but that seems a long way away now.
It does, yeah. So that's United. Let's go to the game you thought I was starting with then, Stamford Bridge, Chelsea against Liverpool. Talk to me. What is it you can't wait to talk about with this game?
The only game of the... Let's go to the London Stadium for the biggest game of the weekend. I couldn't believe it.
It's more the continued paltry showing for Manchester United, which we wanted to get your thoughts on. But
yeah,
talk to me.
But this was... No, I was really looking forward to this game.
Yeah.
The Liverpool game. It was a very interesting game to watch. Liverpool, as expected, first half, really impressive, kind of all aspects of their game, really, just in terms of its energy, intensity level was good, carrying an attacking threat, and we're the better team. Got a little bit lucky, the Abraham chance 1v1 before half time, that Liverpool high line again, just forcing that. That's been an issue for them a couple of times this season. Again, they got away with it, but they were good value good value at a half time. But I'd have to say Chelsea, give them credit, great response second half, particularly the last couple of games, Christian in particular coming off the left back, disrupting them across the back line. So Lampard will be hugely impressed with their performance second half, and probably deserved. You could argue maybe even deserved an equaliser off the back of their second half performance. A little bit disappointed with Liverpool. I wouldn't say necessarily worried. You'll be worried or troubled with their second half performance. There was a little bit of a drop off.
Yeah.
The kind of ball retention wasn't as good as it should be. The front three, I thought, started to overindulge a little bit. For me, no, just like stupid little flicks around the corner, giving the ball away. Salah wasn't quite his most clinical best, picking the wrong options, heavy touches. Giving the ball away, and again for the Chelsea second goal, it's interesting. Like, I know, I don't know if I mentioned to you or Jer some weeks ago about that Liverpool three in midfield, who would be the Liverpool supporters' choice in terms of their best three. And again, as good as there's been a lot of noise about Fabinho of late in terms of how good he is, nobody better in the game at the moment, that kind of holding position. He's a very talented player and a very good all-round game. I am a fan of him, but again, you saw the weakness in his game at the weekend, in the Kante goal. Just that little bit, maybe similar to Maguire in terms of that inability to kind of plant his feet and accelerate 10 yards in the opposite direction. A little bit of kind of dynamism to his play, just a little bit leaden foot at times. The way Kante just dropped his shoulders and didn't really accelerate too much, Joe, if you remember it. It's kind of drifted past Fabinho. It just hadn't got the legs to deal with it. And if you flip back to, if you remember the Newcastle game at Anfield the other week, when Alexander-Arnold got 1v1 against Willems for the Newcastle goal, Willems chopped back in onto his right foot. And I was expecting, just waiting for that holding Liverpool player to come across, double up and either block that shot or force Willems into a second touch. That's generally what you ask of your holding midfield player in those situations. And I can guarantee if Jordan Henderson had been playing against Newcastle that day, he would have been across there, because he's quick over 15 yards and he's got the heart of the lungs of a racehorse, and he can get across and double up a fullback's both sides. Fabinho can't, and he never got across and helped Alexander-Arnold out. The ball was in the back of the net, and it cost him again against Chelsea at the weekend. Kante just walking across him, Fabinho throwing his hands in his air looking for a bailout. Nobody should be giving the bailout there. That's his area, the pitch. He's got to not dominate, but he's got to put his body there and at least force Kante across the pitch. Just hadn't got the legs to do it.
Yeah.
So again, overall, you couldn't pick apart the Liverpool performance too much. And I wouldn't say I was desperately worried. But again, just a couple of those little things, which I think down the road this year, it might just cost them. I mean, they're in a great position. It's, like I said, it's hard to talk them down off the back of where they're sitting at the moment, top of the league. People might be laughing listening to me talk. But in terms of their defensive line, again, nearly got opened up. Even later on, the Mason Mount chance, Joe, if you remember. Again, that comes from the defensive line, Van Dijk's, Joel Matip. Again, position's just too high. If you look at it, he's just a yard or two in advance of Van Dijk, too high up the pitch, doesn't recover quickly enough into the space when the big switch happens. Hence, Mason Mount gets in behind him and could easily have scored the equalising goal. So, look, I suppose every team has always small little areas you can look to improve and you have to be aware of. But it was an impressive performance from Liverpool. It was job done against a very tricky game, potentially, against a kind of improving and emerging Chelsea team.
It is amazing to contrast the atmospheres at Chelsea and Manchester United then. They're both on 8 points, and you have a real sense of worry and doom and gloom about Manchester United, and yet Chelsea and Frank Lampard are applauded off the pitch. And it's all, you know, it's obvious why. They're a young team and there's a sense of energy about them and they're trying to work towards something, whereas there's a sense of stasis about Manchester United. The other one that I'm interested in then is Spurs, also on 8 points. So where are they on this spectrum of the doom and gloom of United to the happiness of Chelsea? I know you saw that Leicester game. Leicester beat them. Leicester are good this year.
They are good. And the team which I thought could make the jump up from that kind of team just hovering around the Europa and below, it was themselves, Wolves, Everton and West Ham before this season. You looked at them before and thought, which of them can jump up this season and gatecrash the top six? By virtue of the fact Wolves had a Europa commitment this year, you probably would have written them off. But Leicester, for me, were always a team I felt no commitments in terms of Europe. And from what I saw at the end of last season, we're always a team that could make that jump. And not just to jump to top six, Joe, actually to jump into the top four. Mm. Because if you're talking about, all the talk understandably has been, will it be Chelsea, will it be Arsenal or Manchester United to make that fourth spot, that Champions League spot. But if you look how Leicester have performed, even this opening kind of, month, 6 weeks in the season, if you're going to make an argument for any of those three teams, and I think there isn't that clear argument for any of those three teams finishing top four, you've got to make the same argument for Leicester in terms of the individual and the collective qualities of that football team. And we've seen, I was expecting to see it at Old Trafford a couple of weeks, so I didn't. They were just off the pace. I was really disappointed with them. A couple of poor individual performances cost them Chilwell. The Demore Gray didn't really turn up on that day, but they did it at the weekend against Tottenham second half. And we saw the qualities that they have and why, over the course of the season, for me, they could be pushing not just for top six, but potentially top four. Madison, for me, has become a key player for them. They shifted him out into the left wing against United, Joe, to accommodate Choudhury and indeed the centre midfield. He becomes such an important player to them now. You've got to get him in the middle of the pitch in those central areas. Now, they have to get him at that central area and actually build a team around them. They did it the weekend. They got him and Tillemans in front of it, and Didi, which is where he likes to play. And we saw the difference that he makes against traditionally a very strong Spurs team who've been a little bit indifferent in terms of how they started the season. Don't think there's an awful lot wrong there, Joe, but I'm talking about Manchester United, kind of central midfield. And if I'm looking at Spurs in terms, again, potential weakness, where the problems are, I look to the centre of that midfield again and think maybe they're just one short in terms of a real kind of physical presence. The type of presence that Wanyama was two seasons ago, Joe, when he was going around the pitch, winning tackles, disrupting play, being a real kind of force of nature, box-to-box powerhouse in that central area of the pitch. He's had a few injury problems, but I don't know what's happened to him. His performance levels have dropped off. Harry Winks is a very good player, Joe, but he's more of a ball-playing holding midfielder. Sissoko, really an attack-minded central midfielder. Likewise, Ali, Eriksen, and Ndombele, haven't been convinced by him yet. Lo Celso as well, we haven't seen enough of. So, for me, it's that central area in midfield for Tottenham, where maybe they're a little bit short. I mean, across the front line, they've got obvious qualities and there's real talent sprinkled around the team. But just in terms of the balance of the team, for me, just maybe where they've been found out a little bit in that central, hasn't quite got the balance right in there, whether it's a diamond they're playing or kind of 4-3-3, hasn't quite found the settled balance in that central midfield area, Pochettino. And that's, if anything, has maybe disrupted them a little bit this season, to the point where, Joe, everybody was talking about the top two, done and dusted, we're all kind of agreed.
Yeah.
And then more or less general agreement, well, Spurs will be third. And then the chit-chat was, well, as we spoke about already, who's going to get that fourth spot? But just seen enough of Spurs this season. Again, the manager, a few pronouncements for the season, not happy transfer policy. Players' attitudes haven't been quite as focused as you would have expected if they have done previously under this manager. So they've probably seen enough this season to suggest that maybe if there's a little bit of a drop-off from Spurs this season, again, there might be a bigger avenue, a bigger opening for those teams over their shoulders, whether it's likes of Leicester, as we've spoken, potentially even maybe West Ham to go in spring and have one of those seasons where they could just actually propel themselves into a top four finish.
Yeah, it'll make things interesting. Listen, we're pretty much out of time. It's remiss of me not to mention Man City when they score 8 goals against a team. I'm not so sure what things new you can say about Man City, but right from when De Bruyne wrapped his foot around the cross on 52 seconds for Silva to the very end, they just played some beautiful stuff. We could have brought you on around half an hour in to marshal things. They were that comfortable.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You're right in saying we've learned absolutely nothing more about Manchester City off the back of that. They're capable of doing that to any team on any given day. The problems they have, and they wouldn't have been exposed to is, again, as everybody knows, in the centre of their defence. They've lost their best centre-half, it looks like, 6 months in the season. And it looks as if they're going to have to persevere with a central defensive partnership, Stones and Otamendi, who the manager lost confidence in.
Well, they went with Fernandinho last two games.
Yeah, well, absolutely. But this is where he is. I think Stones was obviously he's going to be out for another month. But for me, there's an argument for Ferrandino going in there alongside Otamendi or Stones when they come back. But it's not ideal. It's not the situation you want to find yourself in. If you're going to be chasing down a Liverpool team who look as if, you know, got that eye of the tiger about them this year, to have that frailty in the centre, your defence for the vast majority of the season, it's not going to cost them. It didn't at the weekend, Joe, because their ball possession is that good against kind of inferior teams. But when the big games come around, they're going to decide this season. I'm talking about Liverpool predominantly. And it may well just be that, Joe. Liverpool home and away may decide the outcome of the Championship this year. If Liverpool take 4 points against Manchester City this year, for me, that's going to be enough. I think Liverpool are going to win anyway, don't get me wrong. I can see Liverpool now staying top and winning the season. I don't think anybody will catch them. But I think if certainly they take 4 points off City, as City did to Liverpool last season, that would probably do it. Because I don't think Liverpool, as they did second half last season, they had that lead slip.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going to happen again. I really don't. I think mentally they're in a better place. I think they're hungry.
Yeah.
They're not going to make those mistakes again. So, yeah, great performance in Manchester City. But let's not forget about the fact where if it's what's going to cost them the league this season, it's going to be the frailties that they have bang in the middle of the centre of the fence.
Yeah. Kenny, brilliant stuff. We got there in the end.
Oh, about 10 minutes over, Joe. You're too good not to mention it.
Listen, brilliant stuff.
I'm never good at the, you know, 20 seconds. Yeah, I'm always 25-30, am I?
Yeah,
over a period of 15 minutes, that's 20-25 minutes, isn't it?
It sure is. Just gives a soundbite, Kenny. That's all we wanted.
Yeah, true,
No, you're dead right.
You think I'll be able to do that after maybe 10 years? You know,
No. You're dead right. Never change. Right, go on. Good luck.
Cheers, Joe. Take care.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. The greatest football partnership since Shearer and Owen.
Yeah, welcome along to the football show. We have a fresh cast for you this evening. We're going to be joined by Andy Minton very shortly, editor of United We Stand, followed by Dermot Corrigan to talk all things La Liga. In particular, trouble for Valverde at Barcelona. Kevin Kilbane has his feet up this evening. Pat Nevin is in transit. We'll be joined by both tomorrow, fear not. So that is the plan. The latest from Oriel Park. They're into the final 2-3 minutes there now. It is Dundalk looking for a fifth title in 6 years. 3, Shamrock Rovers 2. A win for Dundalk gets the job done. They went in 2-0 up at the break. Sean Hoare header after 28 minutes, followed by a Robbie Benson goal on the stroke of half-time. Put them up 2-0 and then 55 minutes. Aaron Green pulled it back to 2-1 for Rovers. Michael Duffy with a super goal, cutting in off the left-hand side, just drilled one into the top corner on the hour mark. That made it 3-1 Dundalk, and then on 65 minutes, 5 minutes later, Aaron McInniff made it 3-2 just to keep Dundalk on their feet. Rovers have just had a decent shout for a handball penalty, which was not given, so Dundalk survived that scare. They're into the final 2 minutes and they lead 3-2. We will obviously keep you updated once the full-time whistle goes. Now, to kick things off elsewhere, Manchester United beaten 2-0 by West Ham. A pretty pedestrian performance, to say the least, from Manchester United. In a moment, we'll be joined by Andy Minton, editor of United We Stand, for his thoughts. First, though, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer in his post-match press conference.
We didn't create enough chances, but we created big chances, some big moments that we didn't take, and they scored on their... They didn't create too many either. It's a game that could have gone both ways, and... When you got Rashford and Dan James, I don't think pace is the problem. It's a good group to work with. They're determined. They're this is not. Sometimes along the road you're going to hit some bumps, as we've said, some highs and lows. This group was out there determined. They showed the desire. We want to get out. It was a good atmosphere in the dressing room, and they've got the focus right. This group is. They want to do what we're trying to do with working in training. Of course, this, as I said, there's key moments in games that can tip these games in our favour compared to theirs. And you make maybe a bad decision on a pass, left, right, centre, but the attitude and desire is there. That's not the problem. It's the quality when we, in our decision making and sometimes in the, how do you say, in the... In the quality execution, that's the word. So my Norwegian English isn't the best at times.
There we are, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Andy Mitten is editor of United We Stand. He's on the line now. Evening, Andy.
Evening.
Solskjaer, in fairness to him, there is reasonably calm. He's not losing his head in any great way. Is that in general keeping with how he dealt with the defeat yesterday?
yeah, he's been, he speaks quite well, whether win or lose, but it doesn't reflect the mood among United fans after a pretty awful performance. Another one at West Ham, the third one in successive seasons. The 3-1 defeat last season probably saw Jose Mourinho lose 10% of the support. The season before was a dreadful 0-0 game. And I don't think United fans were too optimistic about beating a good West Ham team ahead of the game yesterday. Probably weren't against Leicester the week before. But while they scraped to win against Leicester, they were well beaten by West Ham. And I've written a lot about a fragile confidence because there's definitely quality issues there. There are injuries as well, to be fair.
Yeah.
But there are quality issues there, and there's been this fragile confidence, and it takes baby steps. It builds up a little bit, and then they lose a game, as they did against Palace, as they did against West Ham, and it comes crashing in. And this Manchester United soap opera, a lot of people love to watch it, especially when United lose matches as well. You get this big cloud enveloping the mood when they've lost a game. It used to be when they drew a game, but expectations have dropped away in the last couple of years. The bottom line is it's just not good enough. Manchester United are one of the biggest clubs in the world. They shouldn't be eighth in the table. And yes, Tottenham, they've also got 8 points. I think Chelsea has as well. And Wolves, who people were saying could go past Manchester United, they've not won a game all season. It could be much worse, but fans will always look closer to home where it matters most. And this team has been unconvincing so far. I don't think anyone expected the team to even challenge for the title, but they need to see some positives. And they have come. The free signings have been decent signings, which Ole Gunnar made. The youth system is much improved on 4 years ago, certainly since I wrote a piece in 2015, highlighting the shortcomings. But you can build for the future, but you still need results in the present. And this is the worst start to the season since David Moyes and Louis van Gaal both got 8 points from the first six matches. But after those six games, Moyes' team won four and drew one of the next five games. I can't see this Manchester United team winning four and drawing one of the next five games. People talk about finishing fourth. To finish fourth, you've still got to go on some good runs. You've still got to beat good teams. And I'm not convinced that this United team can do it, especially when they keep picking up injuries. So it's a worrying time. There has been a lot of knee-jerk reactions around, as there has been any Manchester United defeat, but a lot of the worries are well-founded.
Andy, what jumped out at you as the most worrying aspects of the performance on Sunday?
That West Ham probably had better players than Manchester United. Ole Gunnar talked about the lack of execution before goals, before a lack of goals. They're not creating the chances either. I know there were a couple of chances yesterday, but United had scored one goal in each of the previous five matches. I think they've scored 16 in the last 17 games. It's nowhere near good enough. Okay, Martial's injured. Mason Greenwood's good prospect. He wasn't able to play. Marcus Rashford doesn't look like a number. He doesn't look like a Manchester United centre-forward. And I know he's got talents. I know he's got pace. I know he stretches teams. I know that Pep Guardiola will take him above every Manchester United player. And he knows a lot more about football than I do. I know that Barcelona were watching him because I wrote the story. And they know how to do the jobs. But if you play up front for Manchester United, you've got to score goals. And he's not scoring anything like it, as many goals as he needs to. He's still young. He's scored some great goals. He's provided the best moment of this calendar year for Manchester United with that penalty in Paris. But when the team are losing to West Ham, and they deserve to lose to West Ham, and when the team are eight, at the start of the season, there are statistical anomalies, but the way it's looking at the moment, this team looks like they're going to be eighth after 20 matches. And that's just not good enough for a club. You've got the second highest wage bill in world football. Something's going badly wrong here. Now, what's going wrong? The recruitment has been poor in the last 6 years. They are trying to right some of the wrongs. I actually like what Ole Gunnar is doing. I will be patient with him. I will support him. He needs support. If he can bring another three good players in the next transfer window, then we should see significant improvements. But he still needs to be getting results in the short term, because every time they don't, it'll kick off as it has done.
Mm. Yeah, it's difficult on a whole host of fronts. As you said, this is not just a new problem. It's 6 years of poor management at a higher level. If you look at the form, The Guardian teased it out and put it, it crystallised it very nicely. So since that PSG win, it's been 5 wins, 4 draws, 10 defeats in all competitions. And if you just take Premier League form, then going back to that PSG win, Premier League form, it's 1-4, draw 4, loss 7, or 16 points from 15. They say transpose that across a 38-game season and it makes 40.5 points, which is close to relegation form. I mean, things really have evaporated since that PSG night, really. You often have a sense of how things are behind closed doors in so much as anyone can. What's the feeling on Solskjaer amongst the squad?
He's still popular. He's a popular, hard-working, decent human being who's not spreading poison around. I saw that stat. I wrote that stat myself soon after the game yesterday.
Right.
Because I've been at these matches, and a lot of them have not been pretty. The end of the season was terrible. It was as bad as PSG away was good.
Mm.
And it is relegation form if you take the form from the 6th of March, although it was title-winning form if you take the form from at the start of the year. Ole Gunnar's popular. He's got good coaching staff around him. And there's a belief that he knows what he's doing. He needs to be supported. He's under a lot of pressure, as anybody would be. It's a huge job for any individual person, and he tries to share the load. Got good people around him with Kieran McKenna, Michael Carrick, Mike Phelan. He's amenable with the media. He can be ponderous sometimes with the media, but I think he's a straight person. He answers questions. I don't think he's not built up a bank of credit where he can start manipulating media. I think he's just got to play a straight bat at the moment and speak well of players who he needs to be on side, because this is a United squad which, if anything, is lacking. He can't start alienating his players. He's strong behind closed doors when he needs to be. He's not a soft touch by any stretch. He was brought in and asked to lift the mood, and he certainly did that. But it all boils down to results.
Mm.
You've got to win football matches. It's that simple. And when you don't win football matches, this negative lens goes over absolutely everything.
Mm.
So if you're Jesse Lingard in your South Beach hotel and you're jumping around saying beans, 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 you've just won the European Cup, there's no issue there. But if you're doing it when most Manchester United fans are fuming because of the terrible way that the season's finished, you're just doing the wrong thing at the wrong time. And Ole Gunnar gets that. He tells his players, he talks of the importance of being a Manchester United player. Mike Phelan does exactly the same thing. And there probably is a lack of leaders in that dressing room. If you look at the characters they had there in 2013, they didn't always get on. They'd fight with each other. The stuff which never got into the papers would be headline news. But you had really strong personalities, totally different from different backgrounds. Vidic, Evra, Giggs, Rooney, loads of them, 8 or 9 of them. And then go back the generation before that, and you had Keane, and you had a different version of Keane the next day, and then you had Roy Keane as well, and everyone else around him. That's lacking now. There are signs that Harry Maguire can be a leader. There's some very other determined players there. But again, it's Manchester United standards, not unreasonably, are very, very high.
Yeah, and so say, and we're into if, buts and maybes here, but it's interesting to get a sense from you of where the Glazers are and where Woodward is. And we saw that, and nobody knows if it's true or not. I don't know if you're an official lip reader, the Phil Jones-Woodward thing, but that's been doing the rounds. If the slump continues, like on the one hand, increasingly the club hierarchy could become nervous about Solskjaer's lightweight CV, and obviously there would be the slump, versus I think probably an awareness even amongst United fans that they just don't want to chop and change another manager, that it upsets everything. You have to get used to a whole new ideology, and that would be reflected in transfers, and then you've got to give that more time. Allied to his legendary status, which must count for something. It's hard, you know, you weigh up those two contrasting things, and it's hard to know how safe this guy will be if things were to career really badly over the next 5, 6, 7, 8 games.
They're both compelling arguments weighted against each other. I do think United have made the bed. They've got to line it now. I don't recall any complaints on the 7th of March when he was given the job permanently. He's got to be given time to do the job now. There's going to be bumps along the way. He said that. We've seen it already. We knew there were going to be bumps along the way. And if a team's going to finish fourth, they're probably going to lose 10 games in a season. Well, they've lost two already. Problem is if the team's finishing ninth or 10th, that's another different dynamic on it again if they're not playing European football next year. And I believe for this year, the Europa League is actually good for the progress of younger players who maybe wouldn't have played in the Champions League. Woodward is not popular. He's overseeing this. He's been the leading executive at the club. There's a scepticism about him. When he talks of bringing in a sporting director and that doesn't happen, that makes fans even more mistrustful. The Glazers have never been loved. That was a takeover which should never have been allowed to happen. However, the club have still spent a huge amount of money in the last 6 years with them in charge.
Yeah,
this isn't the era of no value in the market as Manchester United pull out of paying 30 million for Karim Benzema. They've squandered money. They've wasted money. And most managers want money. Well, they've had it at Manchester United. You'll never find love from me for the Glazers. I don't think that they... I don't think United need to be owned by anybody like Barcelona or Madrid. They're big enough. They don't need to be a soft power tool for a sovereign nation.
Yeah.
They're big enough as they are and hugely profitable. But when results go against the team, then the discontent rises among supporters, and it does so in many different ways because the fans are just frustrated.
Yeah.
Just it's deep frustration, and you'll get it today, Monday, and it'll subside a bit, Tuesday, Wednesday. Beat Rochdale, someone scores a hat-trick, it'll lift 10% again. And
yeah.
This is a cycle, and it's a pretty negative cycle. It's not Manchester United.
No, it's true. And maybe just a last point to finish on. And you've made the point before that when you go to Old Trafford, and we did see this under Mourinho and under Van Gaal, I guess Moyes wasn't there long enough really to see it. And now Solskjaer is. Old Trafford's a fairly patient place. You know, you could argue these would be a fairly spoiled bunch who would be hopping out of their seats if they're not winning the league at least once every other year. But they've been very patient with each manager, in fairness, in the ground, whatever about the broader world of social media and fan TV and all that stuff. One of the things which I suspect really got them on side when Solskjaer took over was, you remember those first few weeks he talked about players running beyond the ball, let's at least score goals, let's play quote-unquote the Man United way, whether that's a real thing or not. I happen to think there is something in it. And this had been after the fairly dull Jose Mourinho and Van Gaal eras. And I think there was a sense, almost, you know, similar to what's going on at Stamford Bridge of, well, okay, look, we are not going to be title contenders anytime soon, but God, let's get back to being a bit fun to watch and scoring some goals and having a threat. And actually, got to be honest, I wouldn't say many neutrals are looking forward to watching United just now. Even that initial selling point that Solskjaer brought seems to have evaporated.
Yeah, that's all true. And the mood is definitely different at games to online. It's totally different. The fans are supportive, they're patient, maybe to a fault, in that they'll back the person who they can see in real life 50 or 100 metres away from them. And Ole Gunnar will benefit more from that than most because of his legendary status at the club. But the fans are not stupid either. They want to be entertained. They work hard to pay for the season tickets. They're paying between £500 and £1,000, which these days is €500 and €1,000, to watch Manchester United. And if it's dull, it's dull. That's what did for Van Gaal. That's what did for Mourinho. The fans will not accept a defensive formation at home against Crystal Palace. And there are all these stats when Van Gaal was there of people who say, I sit in the scoreboard end, I've not seen a goal at my end for 7 months. You're just stuck it was funny.
Yeah.
And if the football's not entertaining, then the discontent will start to build. There's so many factors you can put into whether a manager stays popular or not.
Yeah.
And the club, little things like today, they're gonna look at bringing safe standing in. That's great. If the women's team are winning, that's great as well. But the results of the first team overshadow everything. If the team are playing well and they're losing or they've drawn at West Ham yesterday, people will accept that. They're not expecting a league title this year.
Yeah.
And some of your fans don't help as well because some of them, whether they like it or not, were only attracted to the team that were winning. And football teams do not always win. No team in history has always won. And this is the uncomfortable truth. Now is that the team has stopped winning. But in the 80s, when I started going to games, it wasn't a winning team. It wasn't a team that went close to winning the league.
Sure.
But I supported them.
Yeah. We'll watch it develop over the next couple of weeks and months. Andy Mitten, editor of United We Stand and other publications as well. Thanks very much, Andy. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Andy Mitten there speaking to us just a short time ago. While we were speaking to Andy, it's gone full-time in Oriel Park. Dundalk have beaten Shamrock Rovers by 3-2. They are League of Ireland champions for the 5th time in 6 years, and Vinnie Perth was celebrating, as you might imagine, and well-deserved too. So Dundalk have beaten Shamrock Rovers 3-2. They've won the league. We'll be talking about that before we go at 10 o'clock as well. In the meantime, Dermot Corrigan is waiting patiently to tell us about strife at Barcelona.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, the greatest football partnership since Shearer and Owen.
Now, welcome back. So we're checking in on all things La Liga. Dermot Corrigan is standing by. Hi, Dermot.
Hey, Joe. How's it going?
Very well. Thanks for joining us. So Madrid, after their rather embarrassing evening in Paris, were winners in Seville at the weekend. They beat them 1-0. Benzema with the goal, which just eased the doom and gloom surrounding Zinedine Zidane. It means they are, along with Athletic Bilbao, top of the heap in La Liga on 11 points after 5 games. Meanwhile, away to Granada, Barcelona lost 2-0. So after 5 games, Barcelona are in 8th. They have just 7 points. Things must be getting a bit sticky for Valverde under pressure now at Barcelona. They play Villarreal tomorrow. How much pressure is he under? What's going on here? You know, 7 points in 5 games is fairly miserable.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. It's the worst record for Barca at this stage of the season since La Liga moved to 3 points for a win back in 1994. So something's definitely gone wrong. And away from home, they've been awful. They've only picked up 1 point from their 3 games. And Valverde is getting most of the stick. He's in a difficult position because if you remember back to the end of last season, they had that disaster at Anfield in the Champions League. Then they lost the Copa del Rey final. And a lot of people thought that Valverde's his time was up. The board backed him. They decided they couldn't get anybody better. But still, there's a lot of people who think, you know, that he lost a lot of his power at that stage, a lot of his status. And the way that they have started the season, he's already coming under pressure. And people are wondering how long he's going to last, really.
What are we seeing on the pitch?
It's just a bit of a mess, really. Like Barca have always been... Well, the first thing to say is that Lionel Messi's been injured for the start of the season. So when it comes to Barca, when Messi's out, then they're a different team completely. But without him, like at the weekend at Granada, there's the 5th different midfield three in their 5 games so far. He switched it all up completely. Busquets was back on the bench. De Jong, the new signing, who was pretty good, he's played in all 3 of the midfield positions. He seemed to play on the wing in 1 game as well. And it's like Valverde, he's not sure of... He's got a good few new players in the team. He had injuries. Messi was out. Suarez was out for a while. And he just hasn't been able to get them to click at all away from home.
Mm. Messi's only played 45 minutes. Suarez has played 130 minutes. He's managed 2 goals. Griezmann has played every game and scored in 1 game. So, yeah, it's not quite happening for him either. Is there any great salvaging of this in the short term beyond just Messi getting back and doing what Messi does?
That's going to be the main thing. Is you know, everybody's going to look to Messi to, presumably he's going to start now tomorrow night against Villarreal. But Suarez and Griezmann, like the goals that they scored, they both scored some really good goals in the home games where the Barca were brilliant. You know, they beat Valencia 5-2, they beat Betis 5-2 as well, I think, scoring lots of goals. And if you set them up for chances, then they're going to take them because they're good players. But the way that the team is set up at the moment, Suarez is, you know, he's a bit static up front. The midfielder not linked with him. Griezmann doesn't seem to know where he's supposed to be playing. And then, you know, Messi has to come in. Maybe that's going to shake things up again. But you don't get a feeling that Valverde knows, you know, where to put all these new players that he has and the different squad options that he has. You don't get a feeling he knows how to fit them together yet.
The word is that one of the things in Valverde's favour is that he still has Messi on side.
They do seem to get on well and they're similar enough characters in a way. You could say that both of them are fairly low profile type guys. They're not kind of bombastic or they're not people to go and give great quotes to the media or to play along with the fame part of the game. you'd wonder, though, because Messi gave this interview to Catalan paper Sport a couple of weeks ago, where he was very critical of the direction that if you read between the lines of it, he was very critical of the direction that the club are taking over the last while, you know, the competitive nature of the squad. That might have been more a dig at the president of the club, the board and the players, the transfer policy than it was at Valverde. Messi seems to still respect him, but what Messi wants more than anything is to win the Champions League again. And if it doesn't look like that's going to happen with Valverde, then Valverde's in big trouble.
Yeah. So what's the feeling over there? Is he under immediate pressure, or is it a wait-and-see job, or do we quite know?
Barca haven't sacked a manager mid-season since Louis van Gaal back in 2002-03, I think. It's not like Real Madrid where, you know, if it's not working, we just throw him out and try another guy instead. They tend to try and stick with the coach that they have. But Bartomeu is going to come under pressure. Back in 2015, they had a similar kind of crisis mid-season where results weren't going well. At that stage, they sacked the sporting director, Zubi Zarreta, and then went on to win the treble at the end of that season. It's not quite, you know, a chicken and egg type of a situation, but it seemed to work for them at the time to have a bit of everybody shouting at each other, sort it out, bring somebody else in, and it worked. The problem is there's nobody obvious to come in and take over from Valverde at this point, and, you know, you wouldn't really trust the Barca board to make the right decision if they did start to call for somebody from left field to come in.
The Premier League is such at the moment that Liverpool's five-point lead feels very significant, even this early in the season. I presume that's not quite the case to the same extent in La Liga. They're in eighth, they're on 7 points. So they're still only 4 points behind Madrid and Bilbao, which is a very surmountable lead, I would think, in the context of those two teams.
Yeah, La Liga in general, the standard hasn't been great, or it's been very even so far this season. None of the bigger teams have really impressed that much. Madrid obviously had their own problems and they've been dropping points. So you know, Barca are not in that bad a position, really. The Clásico is coming up at the end of October. Now, if they come to the Clásico, they beat Madrid, they go ahead of them in La Liga, suddenly it opens up and everything is rosy again. Were they to stay 4 points behind Madrid, then lose the Clásico at home to not a vintage Madrid team, then you could really see the knife starting to come out for Valverde.
Yeah. As for Zidane, he went to Seville. They won 1-0. Benzema scored the goal, which somewhat eases the embarrassment of the 3-0 defeat midweek. I didn't see that PSG game. Obviously, I saw the scoreline, which was pretty eye-catching. So where are they at the moment under Zidane?
They were woeful against Paris Saint-Germain. And I think that's the more... that's the game to look for as an indicator of how they're going to go this season, because they just, you know, the players didn't seem to know what they were doing. They didn't seem to have a good tactical plan for the game. They were missing a couple of people from injury, and Ramos was suspended at the back. But just generally, they seemed to be outthought and outrun. You know, Paris Saint-Germain ran a lot further in that game and looked just a more motivated team for it. They got a reaction. Zidane, you know, he called for intensity. He's not one for super tactical plans, Zidane, but his mantra that he says all the time is that if we work as hard as the opposition team, then we'll have the better players, the more quality, and we'll win. And that's more or less what happened. It wasn't a great game. It wasn't flowing football or anything at the weekend. But Madrid, they got stuck in. Casemiro was maybe their best player, just kicking people or covering ground in the middle of the pitch. They got a good goal, a header from Benzema, and Seville weren't great, and it was enough to win.
Eden Hazard injured his hamstring early on in the season. So this was his first 90 minutes, really, since his return?
Yeah, it's not been great for him. I was just writing about that earlier on. Arrived at Madrid, seemed to be overweight. That was denied, but he wasn't in the best of shape when he showed up for pre-season. Then he got injured, one of the many Madrid players to pick up a muscle injury in pre-season. And, you know, it was difficult. It was his first start away at Paris, and you wouldn't say that was his fault. Zidane's going to really trust him. Zidane really wants him. He has that place on the left wing. Lined up, but now he has to do it. He's got the Sunday is or Saturday is the derby against Atletico Madrid at the Wanda Metropolitano. That'd be a big game for Hazard to make a statement in, maybe to score his first goal or to do something and get people on his side, because it was a lot of money for him. And, you know, people are antsy at the Bernabeu. The mood still isn't great. They still haven't got over last season. And as the big money signing from the summer, there's pressure on him to start to deliver.
So a bit miserable all round. Is there much head scratching and talk of why, and I know these things are cyclical, but is there any obvious reason given as to why things in Spain have just gone a little bit off kilter in a general way? Like, the Premier League seems to be as good as it's ever been, and the strength and depth is phenomenal, and you're watching these mid-table teams put together brilliant football. It seems Spain is just taken a turn in the opposite direction over the last season or two?
Yeah, I go along to you. I would have often defended La Liga, the strength and depth in La Liga, and the quality that teams had, mid-table teams had, compared to the Premier League, even up to a couple of years ago. But yeah, last season, you know, Liverpool and Tottenham coming here for the Champions League final that was in Madrid, taking over the city was a blow. And, you know, people would see Liverpool and City maybe as the two favourites for the Champions League again this year, that Madrid are, you know, they're in transition for sure. Barca are so reliant on Messi and even Atletico, they don't, they have a new team as well. So, as I said before, that, you know, everybody seems to be able to beat everybody in La Liga this season, which isn't something that you would have said that often before. And there is maybe a general leveling of the talent compared to Premier League, where, you know, all of the money that they have, and they're finally spending it a bit more intelligently maybe, and taking over from Spain as the top league.
Mm. What about Bilbao, Dermot? I presume they're not there for the long haul?
No, probably not. They are doing very well. You know, they beat Barca on the opening day of the season with a great late goal. It's what happens with Athletic, because they, you know, they can't sign any players, or they don't sign non-Basque players. They have a fairly settled squad. The coach came in at the midway through last season as a former Athletic player, Garitano, a really intense, methodical type of a guy. They don't play great football, but they're really well organised. They're really hard to beat, and they've got momentum at the minute. So, you know, they could easily take fourth place. Athletic finished fourth maybe 5-6 years ago, got fourth and into the Champions League, and wouldn't be beyond them this season to make it again.
I saw Gareth Bale had a brilliant goal ruled out due to offside. So is he back getting game time, 90 minutes territory? Where is the relationship with him and Zidane at the moment?
They're kind of condemned to understand each other, I think. I wouldn't say they've had like long heart-to-heart conversations behind the scenes. I don't know really how much they talk at all, or if there's much conversation that goes on. But again, with the injuries that there has been, and with the awful transfer window that Madrid had last year, then Bale is back in the team. And he appeared to be trying to prove a point in his first couple of games. You know, scored a really good goal at Villarreal as well, and that goal against Paris Saint-Germain would have been brilliant. The debate here over whether with his celebration, because he looked really cheesed off as he turned around after scoring the goal and was nearly knocking the players away, whether that was that he knew he'd handball it and that the VAR was going to rule it off and he was thinking would have been great, but it didn't happen, or if he was making a statement by scoring a great goal and then refusing to celebrate it, we don't know. But he's in the team, he's playing pretty well, he's running harder than he had maybe previously, but I don't think it's completely rosy. And again, next summer, you know, his future will be up for grabs again for sure next summer.
Yeah. It doesn't seem like you're getting a great feeling about Zidane's return here, or that this thing is working out perfectly. I mean, it seems like he's as liable, I would suspect, to walk away as Madrid might be to sack him if things don't go well.
Yeah, I was talking to somebody at the weekend who has a pretty good handle on things at the very highest levels up in the Bernabeu, and his feeling on it was that Zidane can't. He's super angry with how things have gone since he came back. He was promised the ability to totally shake up the squad, to bring in Pogba, to get rid of Bale, to build a new team, a new project. That just hasn't happened at all. He's not happy with Florentino Perez, the manager, or the president, but he knows that he just can't resign again. Even on a practical level, he lives here in Madrid. His son is in the youth system in the club. His wife is Spanish. He's settled here in Spain. And to walk away from Madrid twice in just over 12 months will be crazy. How long he'll last if he keeps kind of putting it up to Florentino or challenging him publicly if he was to do that, we don't know. Again, they've got this big game at Atletico Madrid at the weekend. They've got the Clásico, obviously, as well at the end of October. So it's either, as we've seen over the last couple of days at Madrid, it's either they're in crisis or they're flying, and it's going to be really interesting to see how it plays out over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, for sure. I didn't realise he was having a pop at Perez publicly.
In his very kind of understated way, but he's asked a lot now about, you know, are you happy with the squad? Are you happy with the transfers over the summer? And his Spanish is, you know, it's about the same as mine, I guess. He's not 100%, you know, a native speaker. So he keeps things short and curt. Yeah. And he's like, well, it is what it is. You know, I love my players. We have to deal with the situation the best we can. Stuff like that, as opposed to saying, you know, it's brilliant. What an amazing summer we had. What brilliant signings we've made. He's more short about it, and for, you know, that's basically him saying that he's not so happy with it, even though if he doesn't come out and say it 100% or 100% clearly.
I mean, it's logical, really, because there was no way he came back to Madrid for this, you know, this level of rebuild. Who's going to be at their clubs longer, Valverde or Zidane?
I'll go Valverde.
Really?
That he would make it to. Valverde's more likely to make it to the end of the season, I think. If things really go bad, because Barcelona, as I was saying, they don't have that culture of trying for mid-season, a quick fix and bringing somebody else in again. There's lots of other coaches like Xavi, people like that, who maybe just have to wait another couple of years before they'll take over. Whereas Madrid, you know, they could put in Raul, could just step up tomorrow if needed, and that might be more likely to happen.
Yeah.
Or Mourinho, who, just to say, been popping up on Spanish TV here, you know, saying, oh, you know, it'd be disrespectful to talk about Zidane, you know, he's doing a great job, nobody, he's a fellow professional, all that type of stuff, while at the same time just letting it be known that he's available and that he had a great time. He loved Madrid, he loved the Bernabeu, all that type of stuff.
Okay, because he's been on Sky Sports, obviously, doing punditry. So is he popping up, being interviewed on the Spanish TV football shows over there, yeah?
Yeah, he was here in Madrid last week, at a sponsor's event, La Liga. You know, I hadn't seen him around here for 3 or 4 years. So, you know, it was up to him whether he wanted to do it or not, and decided to come and talk here, and was very open. You know, would have made a lot of enemies when he was here before. Wasn't the way he left. Very bitter, you know, especially the mood in the press room used to be awful, really very antagonistic, but he was all smiles, he was all jokes, all talking about how much he loved the life here in Spain. So he says that he's no intention of taking anybody's job, but you know, obviously he'd like a new challenge.
Okay. Dermot Corrigan, thanks so much, Dermot, appreciate it. Football on Off the Ball with Paddy Power, the greatest football partnership since Shearer and Owen.